Good morning, everyone. You're listening to Husky Nation News right here on WHUS Doors on 91.7 FM. I'm your host, Katie Service, and this is a recap of all of the news from the University of Connecticut from this past week. This show is in collaboration with UConn's newspaper, The Daily Campus, and UConn's student-run television station, UCTV. Husky Nation News is a broadcast that informs the public about recent news and events within and around the UConn area. It will include original reports from the WHUS News Committee, The Daily Campus, and news packages from UCTV. We will also be discussing local and global news, what events are coming up in the Storrs Mansfield areas, and will provide some insight on UConn's fall athletic teams. This year, there is a new addition to the show, and we will be having members from other Tier 3 organizations joining us each week to discuss what's going on in their respective organizations and diving deeper into the work that they do for the UConn community. For those who may be unfamiliar with what a Tier 3 organization is, there are six located on the UConn Storrs campus, including WHUS Radio, The Daily Campus, UConn's television station UCTV, the Undergraduate Student Government, otherwise known as USG, Nutmeg Publishing, and the Student Union Board of Governors, otherwise known as SUBOG. These organizations are funded by students for students, meaning these various organizations generate free programming for all undergraduate students. That audio is of the UConn Graduate Employee and Postdoc Unions rally from September 10th. That was a contract bargaining kickoff event hosted and made its way into the UConn Student Union on September 10th, like I said before, at 9:30 a.m. This rally started on Fairfield Way and transitioned into the UConn's Student Union, making its way up to the fourth floor to the Women's Center, where they met to negotiate their contracts with UConn administrators. Now, I'm going to introduce Assistant News Director Rhea Kowalski into this conversation quick to discuss the events that occurred as we were both present for the rally, and also to discuss a bit about John Versenio, who was the orchestrator and point of contact for this event. So, Rhea, you want to share a little bit about what was going on at that rally?
Yes, so we arrived... We trailed behind the crowd chanting. We arrived on the fourth floor of the student union to see they continued on with the chanting. And then a unknown, really named businessman, when asked, I approached this man and asked him his name and position, to which he responded that his name was Corey. But also, when asked about his position, all he really said was that he was a businessman.
Yes.
We do not know, really, if he is related to UConn or not. But following that, after the crowd had left the fourth floor of the union, we were able to talk to John Versenio, who was willingly able to provide answers to questions not only with our Tier 3 organization, but also with the Daily Campus, and we have continued contact via email, which is really great.
Yeah, and I have a quick audio clip from the interview that we had with John earlier this week.
When labor unions are able to get any sort of like, you know, socioeconomic justice or like redistribution of wealth, that really helps the entire community. So things that we're especially focused on is getting more parking for graduate employees, getting more parking in general, right? More parking in general means more parking for undergrads, more parking for staff and faculty as well. Other things we are kind of demanding too, you know, ICE off campus. We don't want any sort of like, you know, police ICE collaboration to start taking people for you doing labor demonstrations or being active politically in sort of any way. Other things that also affect the larger community, we want better bus systems, right? We want better buses going around campus, but also to like Willimantic and Storrs, where a lot of graduate assistants live.
And that was a clip of the interview that we had with John Versenio earlier this week, kind of discussing what their labor union was advocating for and what they were hoping to get out of their conversation with UConn administrators.
Yeah, it was a really great interview. And I look forward to continuing the conversation with him and some other associates.
Yeah, as do I. So now we're going to head over to our daily campus reports. We have some friends at the Daily Campus who recently reported on the new updates to the UConn 2025-2026 housing contract. This was announced by the University of Connecticut's Department of Housing Administration and Finance, according to an article written by staff writer Jani Salisbury. These updates were sent in an email to students last week stating three changes to fees and housing eligibility. One of these changes included an increase for damage and upkeep of facilities, which means if a student requests to be let into their dorm after being locked out, they will be charged $50, according to the article. Originally, the charge was $25, but this aspect of the housing contract was last changed roughly 20 years ago, as stated by UConn spokesperson Stephanie Reitz. This is due to the increased labor and equipment costs, and the fees will go towards staffing these services for students. Another change to the housing agreement includes an upcharge during check-in and check-out if a student does not return their dorm room key. This cost was previously $100 and has increased to $150. The charge for an unreturned mail key has remained the same as at $25. In terms of housing eligibility, students with outstanding balances or bursar holds related to their fee bill or medical holds can be excluded from housing selection and room changes. Now we're going to throw the mic back over to Assistant News Director Rhea Kowalski, who's going to share a little bit about what's going on in local news. So Rhea, what is happening in the Storrs Mansfield area this week?
Thank you, Katie. So we are going to be starting off with a story that is right here on campus and was covered by another Tier 3 organization, the Daily Campus. So two electric buses have become available on campus as a part of UConn's Sustainability Action Plan. The Associate Director of Facilities Operations, Andy Kelly, mentioned that the buses may be available to run for students on campus routes this academic year, but they're unsure on when the official start date would be. Kelly says that the hybrid buses were ordered a year ago and would likely be replacing the ICE bus, which is a bus that has a decal of the ice hockey team and some fans. It is an older bus, which is why it would be the first to be replaced. Kelly also said that the choice to go hybrid as opposed to fully electric had to do with cost effectiveness for our school. UConn's Department of Energy and Environmental Protection issued a grant that helped offset the costs for these hybrid buses. UConn also says that the buses are now available to have a charging station on campus, which was completed this summer. However, another issue would be the recent operator shortage, which has led to the combination of the red and silver lines, which some students may know and have noticed. This is all in accordance to the UConn Transportation website. But all this aside, UConn students should look forward to this new step in sustainability. The next story I have comes from what I like to call UConn's lost campus property. I did not become aware of this story, this lost campus, until reading this story a couple hours ago. So, but this is better known as UConn's West Hartford campus that was located on Trout Brook Drive, just north of Asylum Avenue. The campus was always facing possible closure until 2012, when the university announced that they would be moving the space to downtown Hartford, which opened in the fall semester of 2017. Now the area where UConn West Hartford once stood is now being sought for a remediation. They're seeking to apply the Connecticut Department of Economic and Community Development, or the DECD, Municipal Brownfield Grant Program in hopes of securing $6 million in the remediation. The goal of the project is to demolish the remaining abandoned buildings and to build 11 new four-story ones. Throughout the past couple of years, five grants have been awarded under the Brownfield Municipal Program, and in addition to these buildings, which would likely be used as rental properties or as townhomes for purchase. I'm Rhea Kowalski, and that's all for local news. Back to you, Katie.
Thank you so much, Rhea, for that brief. Now, before we dive into our state and global news report this morning, I'd like to share a quick disclaimer for those tuning in. I will briefly be discussing sensitive topics that include gun violence and school shootings. If these are sensitive topics for you, I would suggest turning down the volume of your streaming device for the next few minutes. Now to get right into it. In our global news report this week, one of the biggest news stories originates from a college in Utah. Conservative activist Charlie Kirk was shot and killed during his first stop on his American comeback tour at Utah Valley University on Wednesday. Kirk was the co-founder and CEO of the youth organization Turning Point USA. The organization's mission is to identify, educate, train, and organize students to promote the principles of fiscal responsibility, free markets, and limited government, as stated on the organization's website. Kirk was most well known for his Prove Me Wrong tables, where you would have young adults approach him and debate political standpoints. At the event, a single shot was taken into the crowd of 3,000 individuals, striking Kirk in the neck, according to a statement from the Utah Department of Public Safety given to the Associated Press. Two suspects were taken into custody later that same day. However, neither of the suspects were determined to have any connection to the shooting. The Federal Bureau of Investigation has since released photos of a person of interest in the case. As of 10:30 a.m. this morning, officials have identified 22-year-old Tyler Robinson of Utah as the suspect in Kirk's assassination, according to the AP. Utah Governor Spencer Cox said he believed to have acted alone and that the investigation is still ongoing. Classes at Utah Valley University have since been canceled and students were asked to evacuate. Those who remained on campus have been instructed to stay where they are until police officers can escort them off campus, as reported by the Associated Press. Now, roughly an hour later, another story broke on Wednesday about a school shooting at Evergreen High School in Colorado. Three students remained in critical condition and were taken to the hospital following the gunfire, as reported by ABC News. One of these students was the suspected shooter, who was injured by a self-inflicted gunshot wound, as stated by ABC News. Later that night, the sheriff's office stated that the suspect died through a social media post. The identity of the shooter has not yet been released. One of the students who sustained non-life-threatening injuries was released Wednesday night, according to ABC, and another one of the victims remains in critical condition, as stated by hospital officials on Thursday. Now we're going to transition over to some more positive-based news on what's happening here in the state of Connecticut. On Wednesday, Governor Ned Lamont announced a series of executive actions to ensure that COVID-19 vaccinations would be available for Connecticut residents. Residents who are interested in being vaccinated can be, as state-regulated health insurance policies remain the same as stated in a press release on ct.gov. Adults of any age can receive the COVID-19 vaccine at pharmacies and at medical practices. Children between 6 months and 18 years can receive vaccinations through pediatric providers who participate in the Connecticut vaccination program, according to the press release. Lamont released a bulletin confirming that COVID-19 immunization coverage is mandatory under the Connecticut insurance law. These actions ensure that insurance coverage for these vaccines are based on the guidance from the Connecticut Department of Health, and there are no changes for state-regulated plans. For employers who offer self-funded plans, individuals should confirm their immunization benefits as recommended in the press release. Now, in other news in the state of Connecticut, Attorney General William Tong sent a letter to WNBA Commissioner Kathy Engelbert requesting a handful of documents in regards to the state's professional team, the Connecticut Sun, yesterday. Attorney General Tong is requesting that the league provides the following information: a copy of the WNBA operating agreement, the WNBA's membership agreement between the Connecticut Sun and the WNBA, the WNBA's operating manual, the WNBA's league rules and regulations, and copies of all valuations of the Connecticut Sun, including any appraisal, offer, and/or express of interest, as listed in the letter. This is in an effort to understand the league's role in the potential sale of the Connecticut Sun to a buyer who may relocate the team. Following the request, Tong has also requested a meeting with WNBA leadership. In the letter, Tong says, "I am troubled by recent reports in the press that the WNBA may be wrongfully blocking a sale of the Connecticut Sun that would keep the team in Connecticut in a manner that may be anti-competitive and may violate state and federal law." He continues in saying, "The letter He continues in the letter saying he's concerned that the WNBA is demanding that the team is sold tens of millions of dollars below market price and sold to an owner who will relocate the team. As more information is released on our beloved Connecticut Sun team, we will be sure to report it here right on Husky Nation News. Now we're going to be sending it over to our sports director, Vinny Carbone, for his segment of Carbone's Court. Vinny, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well, thank you, Katie. How are you?
I am doing okay.
Nice.
There's been a lot happening in the media the past few days, and we are having some technical difficulties on our end right now with some of our audio. So we're making it work.
Yeah.
But I think it's going well. Okay, going well over here.
Yeah, brand new board. We got through all the difficulties. Now we're here. Mm-hmm. Thank you for transitioning the WNBA story into sports. I mean, I really hope the Sun do stay in Connecticut. They're so close to us.
And I was wondering if you heard about that.
Yeah. And Patrick Boots actually mentioned it to me. He loves always, the Connecticut Sun. It's one of his favorite teams. And
always Patrick Boots.
He told me that news, and I was like, wow, I really hope they stay. But back into UConn sports. You guys have now entered Carbone's Court. We're back for week two of this semester. It's a good name, I know, right? Let's start with women's soccer. The UConn women's soccer team added two more wins this past week, improving their record to 3-2-1. Anaya Johnston scored the Huskies' lone goal to push them past Yale on Wednesday. And then last night, they took down URI 2-0. Two amazing goals scored by amazing assists in that game. Alexandra Taylor had a great cross to Chiom Okafor where she headed it in. It was a great goal. And then later in the second half, Sahana Mars had a great pass to Abby Merchant, who buried one. And UConn stays undefeated versus URI all time. They are 11-0 all time versus URI. They welcome the University of Maine Black Bears to campus this Sunday. I will be on that call on WHUS stores. Now over to men's soccer. They are 5-0-2, still undefeated. And there really is only one name I need to say for the last few weeks for this men's soccer team. It's Austin Brummett. I mean, I talked about him last week. This senior transfer from San Diego State scored three goals last week, racking up his total tally on the season to 6. And at this point in the season, he has 12 shots and 6 goals, which is an incredible 50% goal scoring percentage. That's unheard of. And I know it realistically won't stay this high, but for now, it's insane that he's 50% of his shots go in and are scored. And one of his diving headers versus Colgate was actually a SportsCenter top 10 play last week. So great things out of UConn sports. The Huskies host Harvard tomorrow at 6 p.m. Jack Ross and Aditya Welling are on the call here on WHUS Sports at Joseph J. Maroney Field. Now over to football. UConn came up short in a nail biter last Saturday against the Orange of Syracuse. They were up 17-6 with under 6 minutes left to go. Everyone thought the game was over. And then Syracuse proceeded to score 14 unanswered points, leaving UConn down 3 with a minute to go. With some incredible Skylar Bell catches, UConn got into field goal range, scored the field goal to tie the game in regulation, and then Syracuse scored in the first overtime drive, and UConn ended up losing. It was unfortunate, but the UConn football team plays Delaware tomorrow at 3 p.m. Now to the trivia section of Carbone's Court, one of the infamous and the most famous sections of Carbone's Court. Last week, we asked, what year was the soccer field officially named Joseph J. Maroney Field? The correct answer to that was, any guesses? Nope, no. You forgot the question? It's okay. 1997. Wow, that was like 26 or 27 years ago. This week, the question is, UConn women's soccer team has only played the University of Maine 3 times in history. I'm going to do another year question. What year was their first ever meeting? Once again, what year was the first ever meeting between the University of Maine Bears, Black Bears, versus the Connecticut Huskies in women's soccer? To find the answer next week. Now I'm going to send it over right back to our wonderful host, Katie Service.
Thank you so much, Vinny. I actually have no clue what the answer to that trivia question is. I'm also not very good with numbers. I'm very good with news, but not good with numbers. And that's totally okay. So now we're going to introduce our special guest for the day. We have WHUS's own events director, Sire Brock, here in the studio live with us right now, who will be talking a little bit about what he does here and share some fun information about a very fun event that will be happening here at the Student Union tomorrow. So, Sire, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's been a very It's been a good morning so far.
I love that energy. You know what? It's been a great morning, if you ask me. We're keeping the energy alive. So I wanted to ask if you can just introduce yourself and tell us a bit about yourself and what you kind of do here at WUS.
So I'm Sire. I'm a senior here at UConn. I study psych and economics. I'm the events director for WHUS Radio. So in that position, I coordinate and plan all events and then just, you know, bring about everything that we do for it and then consult with both the promotions director and communications director in regards to advertising and, you know, getting the event out there to the student body.
Yeah. And you've had this position now. This is your second term.
Yep.
You've returned from last year, actually with the transition. For those that don't know, Sire's position last year was on our operations board and has now been transitioned to our executive board, which is really exciting for him. There's not much of a difference when it comes to like what that means, but very exciting because it just means that he has a little bit more pull, I guess, when doing, you know, organizing these events. So I wanted to ask you what the transition has been like going from your first term in this position from last year where you kind of walked in and like had to figure it out to how you've like taken what you've learned and that how has that set you up for success into this year?
Yeah, so I would say definitely knowing my limits and then knowing what I'm capable of in a given time span, at least like this year in regards to event planning, it's been a little bit difficult. I would say mainly just due to the fact of like, I'm not sure why, but food trucks were really difficult to get this year in regards to like this event. So it didn't necessarily come out the way that I would have initially wanted it to, but I'm still very proud of like the product that we're going to be putting on tomorrow. But I would say definitely knowing a given timeline of when I can do things and then how good it is to start early when it comes to a lot of these things, because then it's less stress for me to, you know, reach deadlines for when things are really coming close by. And then just also being able to have like a lot more creative freedom and then just consulting with the whole WUS board staff with the events of what we're going on and then also expanding on our event operations every year as well.
That's awesome. Could you actually elaborate on what that event is tomorrow and like what would be going on, where it is?
Yeah.
All of the info.
Yes.
So the event tomorrow is Sounds of Summer. It's going to be happening at 4 p.m. on the Student Union Terrace, or Student Union Lawn, rather. So there we're going to be having Boy Scott headlining with two other openers, one being Hanging by the Scales, and then also Ash Baby, two great local bands that I think are going to be really awesome in terms of showcasing, both having different sounds that we've really never presented before at a WUS event, so I'm super excited about that.
Oh, that's very cool.
And then so we do also have the Dairy Bar truck coming, so it's the first 200 people that are going to be present at the event will be able to get ice cream from the Dairy Bar. And then we will be doing, you know, our general WUS tabling in terms of letting people know how they can get involved in WHUS in general, as well as providing out free merch like t-shirts, posters. I think we are also giving out lighters. Not too sure, though.
To be determined, I believe.
To be determined. Yeah. So it's going to be a really fun and exciting event. I'm really excited. I know a lot of people in like the past years like would bring out like their spike ball nets and then like just doing like little mini picnics out there, too. Like it's going to be a really, really enjoyable event. So I'm super excited.
Yeah, I'm really excited too. My first Sounds of Summer that I attended was last year when I was helping to work the event, and everything felt like it went so smoothly. I remember how nervous you were because it was your first like event in this position, and you were like, I don't know what to do, I feel like I'm just here, I want to be helpful. And I was like, Sire, like, you organized the whole thing, take a second and relax, like enjoy like the moment of like, wow, it's finally happened and the event's finally here. But yeah, I will like to note that one of the openers, Ash Baby, features a Daily Campus employee, actually, the opinion editor Tomas. So if any of you guys are familiar with the opinion section at the Daily Campus, we have another Tier 3 individual who will be performing, which is pretty cool. So it's always open to all the people. Can you tell me a little bit about what the process of picking those openers was like? Because you said that it was all local bands. So how do we, like, narrow it down? But how do you also, like, send out the application form to all the potential bands that might be interested.
Yeah. So the whole application process works this way. I create a Google form, sort of trying to theme it out as well. Mm-hmm. But it's a Google form that I create, and then I'll send over that information to our communications director page with all the information that I need posted on our social medias as well as our newsletters. Normally, the application period is around 2 weeks. We can extend it sometimes or make it shorter, depending on, like, how much time we have to be able to audition for. So then after the application period closes, I will then collect all the information that we got from applications, put them in another sort of form, and then I will form together a committee with the board or just anyone that would like to participate in terms of that. And then just going through each and every band's applications to see what we sort of want is the vibe or what we want to showcase for this event specifically.
Yeah. I'm happy you touched on that, because I know that we have had questions from just WUS community members or other undergraduate students who I know are interested in wanting to perform at one of our concerts, so I appreciate you clarifying that.
Of course.
Yeah. Does anybody else in the room have any questions? I was going to say, that's all that we had prepared. Vinny, do you have a question?
I like your shirt you're wearing.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
What is that from?
It's honestly, it's not like a actual like hockey jersey.
Oh, I saw hockey. I'm the sports guy. So.
Yeah, no, that yeah. You are the sports guy. You're the sports guy.
Sports guy.
But yeah, I thrifted this, and then I tried like figuring out like where this is like from or anything like that, but it's like in coordination to absolutely nothing.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's just a creative
exactly
piece,
and it's like really good quality.
It looks like a real
exactly.
jersey.
That's, what,
that's
like
why.
One.
Yeah.
And I got it for $15.
$15.
Yeah.
Those jerseys go for hundreds of dollars.
That's what I'm saying.
And it looks real, but I mean, I guess if it's not a
yeah, technically
real
it's
team,
not like a real team, but like it's sick. Exactly.
It does look sick.
And yeah, that was my question, or more of my comment. My shirt.
Yeah. Well, so do you have anything else about either the event tomorrow or anything else about your position that you feel like you would like to share with all the people?
Yeah, I mean, I'm super excited about the event. I do hope, like, you know, come attend if you're able to. It's a free event, free to the general public. Anyone can come. Mm-hmm. Boy Scout, who's the one headlining, is a super amazing, talented band. I've been listening to them since maybe my junior year of high school.
Oh, wow.
So it's really exciting to, you know, for them to reach out and then be the ones to, like, really want to come to this. And I really wanted to make this happen. So mm-hmm. I'm super excited about this whole thing. And I'm hoping that you show up if you can.
Yeah. Well, if you couldn't show up tomorrow, are there any other events that people could look out for in the coming month or semester?
Yeah. So next month, we have our Mischief After Dark concert on October 18th. Details are currently still being, you know, finalized, but we will start advertising for the event relatively soon. We're also working on our WHUS prom event. So hopefully, you know, we're not necessarily too sure whether or not we're going to be happening this or end of fall or early spring, but that will be, you know, in the works. And then we have our Battle of the Bands and Spring Fling concert that we do every year that will be happening in the spring semester. So those dates will also be coming relatively soon.
And all of these events are open to students, right?
Yes. So all students are able to come for free. If you do happen to have a guest that you would want to bring that's not affiliated with the university, it's only $5. But I mean, for this event tomorrow specifically, it's free for the entire general public. So mm-hmm. Anyone's able to show up and, you know, enjoy themselves.
And I would just like to point out that we have been talking about a WUS prom for at least a year now, and I am so happy to hear that it's in the works because I am a big advocate for this event.
We're
I think it'll be
happen.
So fun.
No, 100%.
Yeah.
I'm really excited.
Yeah.
What would WUS prom look like? What's your
or what
vision?
Do you want it to look like?
Yeah. What's your
what's
vision?
I just want to be able to... I want to work with the entire board in terms of making this thing come real mm-hmm. or become a real thing. But I just want to give it like another opportunity for people that do have like, you know, prom dresses or just things mm-hmm. from their high school prom that they, you know, may still be able to, you know, use or wear. Just like another opportunity to use it. Cause it's like, you know, you buy it and then it's like, okay, well now this is just kind of sitting in the mm-hmm. closet collecting dust. Like, but I just want to be able to like bring that experience to either some of those who may not have, you know, had the best prom experience or may just want another chance to, you know, wear their prom dress again and, you know, have a good night type of thing.
I love that. I love the sentiment behind that. And I'm really hopeful that this event ends up, you know, coming at some point this academic year. I think it'll be really fun. The last thing that I would like to mention is that you're currently hiring.
I am. So applications are open for events for assistant events director. I am looking for an assistant. This is a pretty difficult job to just sort of like nose dive into without knowing what you're doing. So that's definitely why I want to hire an events assistant. So someone who might want to potentially take over for, you know, my position as I am graduating this year, my position for the next year. It's definitely a good experience, and you learn a lot in terms of event planning and coordination, and you know, working with different departments, either you know, within WHUS or just UConn, and then other outside organizations and things like that. So it's a definitely good work experience and things like that.
Yeah. So if anybody who is hearing us talk about Sire's position and what he's doing, information about the job listing can be found on UConn's job application site 1220. And if you have any questions in regards to the position, please feel free to email Sire. Sire, where can people email you?
So my email is events@whus.org.
Perfect. So, yeah, that's all that we've got today. Thank you so much, Sire, for joining us on Husky Nation News. We loved having you.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciated the opportunity to speak about the events and then the things that I do as well.
Yeah, no problem. So we're going to wrap it up today. Thank you all to everyone who tuned in this morning. A special thank you to our news partners, the Daily Campus UConn Student Newspaper and UCTV UConn Student Television Station. A special thank you to Ethan Smith, the creator of our theme music. I'm Katie Service.
I'm Maria Kowalski.
And I'm Vinny Carbone.
And you have been listening to Husky Nation News on 91.7 FM. And we will catch you next week, Husky Nation. Have a great weekend and rest of your Friday.